On our morning show from WRCO and WRCE Radio, we are pleased to talk about the Richland Hospital and Clinics, and it's just an exciting time for them, and as we look toward the future, we have special in-studio guests, including Bruce Raisler, CEO, and John Anier, chairperson for the board at the Richland Center Hospital. And good to see you, gentlemen. Thanks for coming in here today, Bruce.
Good to be with you.
Lots of things behind the scenes have been going on here this year.
It's an exciting time for our organization, and it's a job and a half for a lot of us.
I bet. So the wheels have been turning a little bit, and the public will know that you've got the land ready to go out here, the old co-tractor lot, and things have kind of been moving, haven't they?
They have. Depending on how closely your audience has been listening, this project is either moving very slowly or very quickly. Uh-huh. And I say that because really the action that we're taking today stems back to 2018 when we did an in-depth master facility plan, did an assessment of our building at that time, and identified a number of shortcomings that ought to be addressed. And given the projected price tag of back in 2018, our board of directors, I think, made a prudent decision that instead of continuing to invest in our current facilities, that we ought to contemplate starting over on a brand new site. We've been in the same location for 99 years this year, and although parts of our building are much newer, a lot of the infrastructure behind the scenes that people may not notice is starting to reach the end of its useful life. And that's why we're thinking it's a financially prudent thing to start over.
So you've had at least one public meeting. How did that go?
It went really well. I think the audience that was there appreciated it. We had lots of audience questions. I did want to make note that we recorded the session, and it's available for people who have a computer to access at richlandhospital.com. And under the About Us tab, there is a section about the facility replacement project. And there you can see the link, the YouTube link there, and the whole thing lays out for those that want to know all the details.
It's early in the process, so you don't, as a result, have pictures and photos and drafts and things like that yet, do you?
We don't have pictures. We're getting closer. We're starting to have some preliminary diagrams, and we certainly have numbers. We, based on what we think the size of the building is going to need to be, we're starting to get a sense of what the budget for the project will be. I think pictures are probably not too far off when we can start to fill our imaginations that way.
John Anier joins us as well. John, were you born at the Richland Hospital?
I certainly was, Phil.
So you're a lifelong resident, and this is a chance to kind of build for the future, isn't it?
Absolutely. As Bruce said, this is a very exciting time at the Richland Hospital and Clinics, and just to look ahead to the future of how this project could help our community and really how it's investing in our community's health for many, many years to come.
As a chair on the board, you kind of have a hands-on look at what could be, don't you?
We do. You know, we certainly have that 30,000-foot view when it comes to what the Bruce and his team are doing on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, it's every month we have our board meeting, and there's always new updates, new ideas of what this hospital is going to look like. So it's very exciting.
Public input is important, isn't it?
It is very important. We want this facility to represent our community. We want our community to be very proud of it. And staff input as well. You know, we want the community to be involved, but we also think it's very, very important for the staff at the hospital and clinics to be integrally involved in the process of planning for this new facility.
I know you've had a chance to travel to other communities, but a lot of communities locally have really nice facilities, kind of on the edge of town as being planned here too, right?
Yeah, we're very excited with our location. You know, right now we are kind of landlocked in a residential area of town, which isn't optimum for a hospital. So we're very excited with our new location to be right on the edge of town, right along Highway 14, where a lot of people will be driving by us every day.
What's the most common question you get from people asking about the project?
You know, probably the most common one I have gotten is why do we need a new hospital? And, you know, the way I answer that is it's a bit like, and I've driven a lot of older cars over the years, and it's a bit like having an older car that maybe you really like, maybe it's treated you really well, but it begins to nickel and dime you. And there comes a point where you just need to replace it. And that's the financially responsible thing to do. And although there's no nickel and dimes involved in this scenario, it's hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars that may have to be put into the old facility to keep it running at a place where we'd like it to be. And as a board, I think we just made the decision, and I think that decision was very clear at the time, that we need to look at this differently, and we need to look at investing that money into a new facility that's going to last us a long time.
Have there been estimates as to what it would cost if you were to kind of band-aid the current location?
The aforementioned study back in 2018 identified it was something in the low $20 millions of dollars that could be spent. The lead study author, project author, was an architectural firm. They did have engineering input, but I think that $22 million may, in fact, at that time, 5 years ago, been kind of light because they looked at it largely from an architectural perspective. I'm imagining that 5 years later, you know, in today's dollars and with the inflation that's occurred and since and during the pandemic and the cost of construction, that cost may easily be $40 million today if we were to do it. And then there are certain things that you still can't change because the old chassis of the building, if you will, is still there. And no matter how much money you put into it, there are things that can't be readily fixed. So I wholeheartedly agree with the board's decision that it's really time to start over.
And in fact, it's not a prime situation, but you have to take patients out to basically a semi-trailer from time to time, don't you?
We do. Our MRI scanner is adjacent to our building, but it's can be a brisk 10-foot walk in the wintertime to get to the MRI.
Mm-hmm. So it's something you've had to deal with, but
it is. I mean, when the former Richland Medical Center and the hospital merged back in December of 2019, having the MRI in the hospital was one of the things that made a lot of sense. And the only way to do it was to have a mobile solution.
On the second part of the morning show from WRCO and WRCE, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the Richland Hospital and the potential new project that will be just down the road from us, our neighbors here on Highway 14. John Anear is here. He is a chairperson for the board at the Richland Hospital. John, I think one of the things that makes this hospital unique is the fact that it's independent of any larger corporations, isn't it?
That's correct. And, you know, we put a lot of value on that independence. We feel like that is an attribute that really brings some flexibility to the organization. And one of our goals through this process is to remain an independent hospital. There are certainly pros and cons to that, but we feel at this point there's more advantages to being independent than to affiliate with a larger organization.
Because obviously somebody could say, Bruce, you know, in terms of that, well, why don't you get somebody else to foot the bill, right?
Well, that is true. Throughout my career, I've worked in independent organizations and system-affiliated ones. And while there are pros and cons, as John says, the downside of being part of a system-affiliated organization is that you've lost local decision-making. And part of being part of a system is this project might not be the priority of a larger corporation. And when it becomes a priority, that doesn't mean that someone else is paying for it. It has to make a good sense on its own merits as well.
Have you and the committee gone to other hospitals and facilities and toured, John?
Yeah, they have gone to several. I know some of the physicians and other staff people have also gone and toured to kind of look at their sections of other hospitals and how they can incorporate some of those good ideas into our facility. So, and my guess is we may do more of that before final plans are drawn.
Do you get patient input about the patient experience and that possibility?
Certainly, from our public hearing a few weeks ago, and really at any time, we're very open to public input. And I don't know that we've necessarily asked patients per se. When we have patients, our new facility is not what's on their mind, but we're very much want to reflect the community's wishes. Just one more thought regarding this independence versus affiliation. I think I kind of think we're in the sweet spot in that while we are an independent organization with a local volunteer board of directors and local management, and we do things that are in the interest of our local patients and our community and our staff, at the same time, you know, we work with these larger systems, and we have visiting physicians from UW Health. We have visiting physicians from Gunderson and others. So that specialty level of care that larger systems are able to offer, you can get a measure of that locally at the same time.
How does that work? Because I know you have video in the room where they will actually come in from another hospital and talk to the patients.
Telemedicine is what you're referring to is a growing feature of healthcare services across our country. Really, I think nurtured substantially during the pandemic when retaining social isolation was an important consideration. So today, we have the capability for telemedicine services in our intensive care unit, where we have intensive care physicians who are, in fact, in Madison that are monitoring patients really all over the state, including any that we have. We have capability for stroke patients in the emergency department to be video monitored. We have capability for sick newborn infants to be monitored as well. And then, of course, we do have our primary care physicians. You can have a primary care appointment as well. But really, beyond the telemedicine component, we have a number of specialty physicians that come to Richland Center in the flesh regularly every day and see patients in our building, and at times perform procedures there, perhaps. Are ordering lab and imaging or rehabilitation studies. So when they come to us, they are effectively leasing space for us for the day. And they pay us rent, and then they will bill for the services rendered as part of their organization.
And that's a nice feature. You know, being local, John, we still have to travel to Madison and La Crosse for some things, but it lessens the travel lots of times, doesn't it?
It certainly does. You know, when somebody has maybe a cardiac issue or something, they can see a cardiologist right here at the Richland Hospital rather than having to travel to La Crosse or Madison. And, you know, some people that maybe have that issue really don't want to have to travel that far, and to be able to go up to the local hospital and seek the care that they need, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, just one more thing about the telehealth or the tele. When I was in the room, I thought I was really out of it when the TV started talking to me, but I realized that was normal, I guess. So they were actually talking with me. But anyway, then I was going to mention a trivia question. The biggest employer in Richland County. I would not have guessed it's the Richland Hospital.
It is. Part of our USDA loan application that I mentioned earlier, we need to let the USDA know about our local economy. So we started asking and called around, and lo and behold, really since the merger between the hospital and the Richland Medical Center came about a few years ago, that's what we added 100 employees. We're now well over 400 employees working for us. We have about a $30 million payroll last year. And, we know from various economic studies that there is a multiplier effect to having a hospital in a community, that all the people we employ physicians and therapists and nurses, lab techs and dietary workers and housekeepers and the rest who live here, live in our area, buy groceries and other support other retailers and restaurants and the like. So the fact that our community has a hospital and clinic like this is a very good thing for our whole community.
Not only would we lose as citizens, you know, in terms of we would have to travel to other communities for hospital care if we didn't have a hospital, but also we lose a lot of people and probably would have to move out because they work here.
That's true. I mean, the certain members of our staff, if there weren't a hospital, they would need to go seek hospital employment elsewhere. We like to think we're a big part of the local economy, and we happen to believe that our new construction, our new project, is going to amp that up, certainly on a temporary basis with construction dollars flowing into town, but then longer term, as we become a stronger and stronger organization and serve more patients and keep more patients locally, that will have a positive effect on the economy. I you know, when you think our total budget is right around $70 million, the majority of that, if there were no hospital, would be spent in Madison or La Crosse or another neighboring community. Not only do we add value to our community through the care that's provided to patients close to home, high quality care, but there is this economic effect that I think is no small feature.
I think it's said when people move to towns, they look first of all at a hospital and a high school, don't they, John?
Yeah, I mean, a small community like this, there is just a very small number of attributes that people look towards. Schools usually are one if they have school-age children, and hospital is probably a close second. They want to know that wherever they're living, they have quality health care that they can access. So, I agree with everything Bruce just said. You know, it's such an important part of the community, and that's why we're so excited about this project. Just kind of realizing that this is going to be here for many, many decades to come, just like the old hospital has been there for 99 years. We're looking for another 99 years out of the new facility.
Yeah, and that's exciting, but who knows where it's going to go? And as Bruce said, the capability of maybe having additions in, 20, 30 years down the road, you've got the capability because who knows what kind of things you're going to need by that point.
Right, right. And, one of the difficult things right now is we kind of know what our budget is. The difficulty in that is then creating the square footage that we can afford. And that's where, some difficult decisions are being made by Bruce and his team in what spaces need to be reduced and why. And that's all to make it more affordable so that we're fiscally responsible and we're not living outside of our means as a hospital. And if that means an addition, in a few years or whatever, as revenue increases and services increase, then we have that flexibility to do that.
So what about people will say to you, what are you going to do with the old building?
I say that's a really good question. Nothing is off the table at this point. It could be developed. I'm not sure in this small community if a developer would want to tackle that. The reason we're wanting to do something different is because of the infrastructure issues within the current facility with just, heating and cooling and technology and all of that. But if a developer would be interested in taking that on, we would certainly entertain a conversation with them. So,
yes, that's correct. We don't know what the future is. We're open to that. We're carrying a budget figure with the possibility that we may be responsible to demolish the building ultimately. I think the neighborhood is really probably best served for residential purposes at some time in the future. We've got a long way to travel before we need to worry about the future of our current facility.
So best case scenario, Bruce, let's say that things go through, all the deadlines are met. We know for sure at the end of the year, how far in the future are we talking?
That is a great question. Best case scenario, and I always want to emphasize and underline that because there are no guarantees still at this point. As I said, we need the support of our legislators and local community and the federal government to make this happen. But hypothetically, if everything were to fall into place, we could issue construction documents late winter of next year, 2024, and break ground in the spring. And we're imagining something like a year and a half of construction. And so probably cutting a ribbon around New Year's Day of 2026, big celebration and tours and everything, and then a move subsequently, right? We would, and it typically, there's a 60 to 90 day shakedown period where the new building is fully constructed but not operating. So early 2026 is the best case scenario.
Public input is important. Again, how can they do that?
Certainly you could talk to anybody on the hospital leadership team, the board of directors. If you have an email capability, we take a lot of questions at communityrelations@richlandhospital.com. And if you send us written comments, it's easy for us to respond to.
Or talk to a board member too, right, Jen?
Absolutely. Phil, that's one of the advantages of the local control, right, is we have a local board of directors that are community members. They have diverse backgrounds, diverse ways of thinking, and we bring that all together to create a board that hopefully right decisions come out of. And if I can, I'm just going to read you the names of board members.
Sure.
Myself, we have John Poole, Marilyn Reinhart, Tracy Peterson, Steve Bauer, Dr. Kay Baling, and Dr. Robert Smith, Pete Walsh, Laura Melby, and Shelley Schmidt. And my guess is listeners will know a couple of those people. And if they bump into them, certainly have that conversation. If you have a concern, express it. If you have a question, ask it. And we'll try to educate people as much as we can. Because, again, this is an exciting time, not only for the Richland Hospital and clinics, but for this entire community and entire area.
Indeed. And as a board member, I know you volunteer in other things, but it's a way to really kind of look to the future and kind of shape Richland Center for the future, isn't it?
It is. As a board member, I feel like our time is very valued by the organization, and the decisions we make are consequential, right, for our community and for the future of this community. So it's very fulfilling duty.
Great. Anything else either of you would like to add here on the program today?
We're just looking forward for the future to unfold, and we're glad to be transparent with the greater community and make sure the community is informed of what our intentions are.
As we get past some of the upcoming deadlines too, are you going to plan some more community, like public viewings of things it could be and things like that?
I would certainly imagine that we would do that kind of thing.
Good. All right. Bruce Raisler, CEO at the Richland Hospital and Clinics, and also board member John Anir, a guest on the morning show. It's an exciting time, and come back and see us when you have a little more information for us.
We'd like to do that.
All right. You appreciate it.
Because the ceiling clearances wouldn't tolerate a new MRI in the building. So that was, I think, a fiscally prudent approach at the time. But it is kind of a good example of the kinds of decisions that we need to make from time to time just to tread water and stay in place. And we're really looking forward to designing a new building that's made to function in the way that healthcare is delivered in the current era.
Yeah, things have really changed just in the last few years for healthcare, hasn't it?
Continuously. I've been in the field for a long time, and back when I was in graduate school, I think our professors were talking about how there would be an inevitable march to more and more kinds of care being done on an outpatient basis and less on an inpatient basis. to the point today where, although, you know, when I say the term hospital, I think the image most people might get is a hospital bed. That's, you know, less than 25% of our revenue stream in our organization today. There's any number of surgeries that were done not so long ago on an inpatient basis are now same day surgery, and it's really quite remarkable.
And with telehealth too, that's another avenue that we didn't have just not too many years ago.
It has sprung up quickly, particularly with the pandemic and people needing healthcare while still being isolated. So that has taken a big leap forward in our country.
So right now, as you look down the road, it's kind of incumbent on some grants and different funding from elsewhere, isn't it?
There's really three major components to our financing plan. One of these, the major one, is that we're going to take out one heck of a mortgage. The United States Department of Agriculture, USDA, we know them, right? They're not just in the food and inspection business. They're also in the rural economic development business, and so they have a program whereby they lend money, not gift, to nonprofit organizations such as ours to help foster the economic well-being of communities. And they do so at a favorable interest rate to us. So that will be the backbone of our financing plan. And we are in the process of applying for that. The second component is hospital internal resources. Just like your home mortgage, you had to come up with a sizable down payment in order to convince your banker that this was that you had skin in the game and you were going to be able to pay back your mortgage. And then there's a third leg that we are looking to attract monies outside of our control today that may come in the form of federal or state appropriations or local donations. And we put those three components together, and that is our budget.
Okay. John, is that what one of the board's focuses is, on looking for donations and fundraising and that kind of thing?
It certainly will be in the months ahead. We have a foundation at the hospital, and certainly they'll be engaged when it comes to fundraising. And the whole budget thing, you know, putting all those pieces together, we're working with a lot of consulting agencies on the financing. It can get very complicated when you're talking that much money. And so we've hired some really competent people to help us with that.
Do you have to match sort of, you know, the loans and the things that you'll be getting from the federal government?
Yeah. I mean, there's a certain part of that that we're going to be required to put forward out of our own monies. So.
Any idea when you'll know for sure that this project is a go?
I would say it becomes increasingly likely over time. You're never really sure until the day you put the shovel in the ground. But I would say we're aware that working with the USDA currently, that for this federal fiscal year cycle, they tend to make a decision before Labor Day. So not too far off will be that component that we'll know whether we are going to be able to have this, as I say, sizable mortgage given to us. And then the federal money is dependent on the federal fiscal year, which of course starts October 1st, but I don't know if any of us are too optimistic that Congress will be able to pull a budget together on a timely basis. We'll keep our fingers crossed. So here again, if that takes the remainder of this calendar year, you know, then we might not know until early next year if we're proceeding or not. I want to say our hospital, we're planning to succeed, and we're planning to get this work done, and we believe very strongly it's something that must be done. But it's not a certainty, and you know, we need the support of local citizens. We need the support of our elected representatives to make it come to fruition.
John, you and I are lifers, so we know the old co-tractor location there. Mm-hmm. But it's optimum in terms of being flat. You can't find a lot of places like that, can you?
No. In fact, we looked at several sites during our looking for a piece of property, and that one just kind of stood out as being the most buildable. The location is great. It's right on Highway 14. Not a lot of excavation will have to take place to get that, you know, buildable. So we were very pleased when we were able to purchase that site.
Well, you have to look at some things traffic-wise, different things, you know, along a U.S. highway that you're going to have to be aware of.
Yeah, DOT will be actively involved in this. I'm sure there's going to have to be some turn lanes and other traffic control structures that are put in as a result of that much more traffic being out that way.
So basically, if we can drive by and picture it, it pretty much is going to take up the whole space, isn't it?
Yeah, between the footprint of the building and the parking lots and whatever landscaping and whatnot, it's about a 36-acre parcel there. So it will take up, you know, the majority of that will be developed as a result of the hospital being placed there.
I know that's one of the things that you both have heard from people is that, oh, it's going to be smaller, actually, but it's going to be a better use of size, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, one of the great things is just the efficiencies that will come out of this new facility. Not that our old building is inefficient. Our staff, our employees do a great job of providing healthcare within that facility. But I think that it will just be much easier to deliver that healthcare in a new building that has the efficiencies of modern design and all that will go with that.
And Bruce, what about attracting staff? You know, you probably have a good chance of, you know, maybe getting somebody in here that maybe wouldn't have gone here. Is that kind of how you're looking at it?
Well, we certainly hope that's the effect. We're familiar with various previous hospitals, rural hospitals that have been replaced, and they do business studies of them to see downstream what's been the effect of a replacement hospital. Perhaps not surprisingly, more patients come to a newer hospital and more staff are attracted to a newer facility. So those would both be very positive developments if they were to occur.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you if you would maybe serve a wider area perhaps as well.
Well, we'll see. I the facility is important. In the end, I think it comes down to the professionals that we employ, that they are seen as competent and trustworthy and empathetic. And if we have talented staff that way, that will determine where people choose to get their health care.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to put down any staff that you have when I was talking about new people coming in, because you have wonderful staff. We've had a chance to talk to some of the new physicians that have just been on within the last year. You got to be really excited about the staff you have right now.
We do have great staff. And, you know, I always say the facility that we have can either help us deliver great care or it can get in the way. And we're looking forward to the time when it really helps us deliver really wonderful care.
Okay. Could we kind of go over the plans a little bit, you know, in terms of the hospital and what you'd like to see in this new facility, Bruce?
Sure. So we've had to do really an analysis of the types of patients we see, you know, clinic patients, if you will, and hospital outpatients and hospital inpatients, how many surgeries and how many emergency department visits. And that helps from an architect standpoint. They use those values to help drive this is how much space we think is indicated. It's true we're going to have a little bit smaller space. For instance, we don't plan to have quite as many inpatient beds because we rarely use them all today. And to have that many in a new facility might not be the best use of dollars in an upfront basis. That said, while our new facility will be a little smaller and more efficient than our current facility, it will be designed so it is expandable. And so if in the future we have more surgeries and more emergency department visits or more inpatients, we can add on in future years.
Okay. So how will it work as far as where the clinic is located? Is it kind of going to be the same, you know, the first thing when you walk in, or have you looked at that?
At the moment, we just made a decision in the last couple of weeks here that we're contemplating a two-story building. And it basically is kind of a wide angle V-shaped building, and that the front entrance would be at the interior angle, at the hinge of that V, if you will. So they'd come in the front door, and that there would be a place to register. And then as we're imagining, the clinic services would be down the left-hand side of that V, and the emergency department and surgery and lab and x-ray would be down the right-hand side, and the inpatient beds would be upstairs. Our facility we're contemplating would continue to have a retail pharmacy. We know that many of our patients today find that service very convenient, and we want to provide that as well.
Okay. The current building, you know, you've got some new wings. You've got, you know, you can kind of walk back into the past with some others as well. And from personal experience, the ICU, which I'm an expert on, there's not a lot of privacy there.
That's correct. I mean, the ICU is tucked back there, so it's, you know, most ICUs are designed in a way that caregivers walking by your sure. room can visualize what's happening. I think one of the more remarkable things about our ICU, and I'm not faulting the people who put it where it is that you don't have much of a view looking out the out the window. Not that that's what you're there for, but you look at another wall of the hospital outside your window. We will have intensive care beds in our new facility, and I think it's going to be a good plan.
An emergency entrance, or where the ambulance would come in, somewhere in the back, maybe?
Yes. Again, as we're imagining today, as you're facing the front of the building, it'd be off on the right side. There would be an ambulance drive-through bay that so ambulances today have to, you know, back in or back out of our circumstance. That would be adjacent to the emergency department. We're imagining a slightly larger number of patient treatment rooms, because commonly or frequently we do reach a capacity. The rooms would all be larger also, and that's I think people who've been to the emergency department can appreciate that. Today, our exam rooms and our trauma bays aren't necessarily, they're not very large, honestly. So a little bit more space gives our staff better ability to work around the patient, gives family an opportunity to be present without being in the way.
I'm guessing you're using staff input as well to kind of help with the design, aren't you?
Oh, my gosh. Our staff input is really critical. From the very beginning, we've been having surveys of our staff at a high level, what's really important about a new building, down to departmental level conversations that individual department managers have with their respective staff, what's important going forward, what is it that we like and we want to keep, what is it that we have today that we don't like that doesn't work. And we've encouraged our staff to visit other, particularly small rural hospitals, and bring back ideas. So when we get to the end result, we're going to have, you know, the best designed rural hospital, I think, that I can imagine.
And equipment-wise, new equipment, or does some of that transfer from the old facility?
Yeah, it'll as I imagine, it'll be a hybrid, because if you imagine the day that one building closes and the other opens, there's a moment when you effectively have, you're running two buildings simultaneously. And so that means that certain equipment needs to stay in the old, and simultaneously there needs to be new equipment in the new. And so there are certain things that will be new and out of the box, if you will. So, you know, a CT scanner takes a few weeks to install, you know, obviously, so some bigger equipment. And then there might be other things that aren't emergent in nature. The example I might offer is our mammography machine. And that's a scheduled procedure. It's preventive. I could imagine that you know, the day comes, you know, we will pick up our current mammography machine and take it to the new site and make use of it. Anything that that we do leave behind, guess what? There's a market for it. Effectively, there's eBay for hospital equipment, and we'll be able to recapture the value for some of the things that aren't needed in the new building. So, be the best of both worlds that way.
Probably not a garage sale. You'd probably find another facility.
there are people who deal in this business as a career that do nothing but sell and resell medical equipment. So we'll get connected with them.
Fascinating stuff. We'll have more coming up after the break here on WRCO's Morning Show. We're talking with Bruce Raisler and John Anier about the upcoming new hospital project. And we'll be right back.